Plunky's music embraces a wide variety of styles and influences. Jazz, hip-hop, R&B, African rhythms, soul music, go-go, and funk. He's traveled all over the world, playing concerts in Africa, Cuba, and Brazil, but he makes his home in Richmond, where he was born and raised. I spoke to him recently at his residence near Bird Park. He told me he was born on the south side of Richmond and graduated from Maggie Walker High School in 1965. I asked him to reflect on growing up in an era before integration.
I grew up in what I refer to as a very segregated Richmond, Virginia. When I went to public schools, the schools were completely segregated. And in fact, I don't think I met my first white person by name till I was well into senior high school. And the first white person I met was Gospodin Tears, who was my Russian teacher, who came to Maggie Walker to teach Russian. It was a very interesting time to be alive. I didn't feel that we suffered for it as a child, because I didn't know any better. I loved my upbringing in Richmond, though in retrospect it could have been better in terms of educational opportunities. But I made the best of what I had, and I think my Richmond experience shapes me, and I'm still in Richmond because I love the place then and I love it now.
Growing up, Plunky was exposed to gospel music at First Baptist Church and soaked up a lot of R&B and blues that was played on Richmond's popular black radio station, WANT. Plunky started making music himself in the fifth grade. His first instrument was the clarinet.
As with most public school kids, I was exposed to classical music. But I had an interesting situation in that most of the music teachers that I had were also professional jazz musicians. And so in their nightlife, they performed jazz. And while they gave us a great basic music coursing early on, their influence can't be underestimated.
Foremost among these jazz-playing public school music instructors was a legendary jazz violinist named Joseph Kennedy Jr.
Joseph Kennedy was a jazz violinist who played here in Richmond. He was from Pittsburgh originally. He played with Ahmad Jamal, among others. Great, great, great musician. He was also one of the first musicians to integrate the Richmond Symphony as a violinist. He had a profound influence on me. He would go during the summers and may play on tour with just great musicians and go to Japan and come back and tell us stories about that. In addition to him, Johnny Payton, who I had the pleasure of, after being his student in elementary and middle school, later in life performing in his big band, Johnny Payton Renaissance Band here in Richmond. He was a great influence because he was a saxophonist. He played the blues and the jazz, and he just had a tremendous tone.
In 1965, Plunky graduated from Maggie Walker High School and moved to New York to attend Columbia University. It was a fateful decision and one that had a huge impact on the direction that his life would take. First of all, he became a band leader.
I formed a band at Columbia. It was called the Soul Syndicate. Now, this band was actually just a typical Richmond soul band transported to New York. But in New York, it was fairly unique in that there weren't that many large soul bands. This was 14 pieces of driving soul. That was our logo. We had 5-man horn section, 4-person singing group, and a rhythm section. And we played all over New York and all the other Ivy League schools. We were a favorite band at New York's Cheetah Club, which was the precursor to the disco era. And you have to understand, this was in the mid to late 60s. In New York at that time, you had John Coltrane playing, you had Bob Dylan playing, you had James Brown playing, and everything in between. So it was just an electric time to be in New York. And after forming my own band and loving the jazz club scene, I left school to pursue performing music as a profession.
Were you worried about being drafted to Vietnam?
I was more than worried about being drafted to Vietnam. This was, in fact, a part of the leaving of Columbia was in part not just a musical career decision, but the result of some political activity. Columbia, for those of you who weren't born in those days, Columbia in 1968 became one of the first college campuses to erupt in this sort of anti-war activity.
The New York City Police Department, in connection with your activities, we have been informed that the police department will take all the necessary action in connection with our complaint against you. This order to remove yourself forthwith is separate and apart from any question of amnesty. You will be subject.
We shut the campus down, took over the building, and during that time I thought the revolution was not only going to be televised, but I thought the revolution was at hand. And I left because I wanted to pursue Afrocentric culture. And yes, the draft was a very, very big concern. And in fact, I got caught up in the idea of resistance. And that was in part of the reason why I moved to San Francisco, because San Francisco had Berkeley and Oakland, and San Francisco as a kind of a hotbed of the left-wing resistance to the war. It was a very wild time. And in retrospect, as a young person, at that time I was 19 or 20 years old or there around, and we were throwing words around like revolution that we had a very idealized view of. But the people who were in power in the government didn't take such an idealized view. They saw it for really what it could have been, which was an attempt to overthrow this government or the way of life. And so they came down pretty hard. There were people who lost their lives. There were people who spent the rest of their lives in jail. There were people who spent lots of time in jail. It was a time, especially for Black Power advocates, a time where we were under siege. And, you know, a lot of the music of that time reflects that political upheaval or that progressive thought. A lot of the music, both in jazz and in R&B, reflects that kind of political activity, that desire to awaken people. There's a whole genre of message music that comes out of that 60s to 70s period that I'm very much a part of. That music perhaps had as much influence on me as anything. People like John Coltrane, when he performed Alabama, he was talking about the civil rights struggle in Alabama, or Nina Simone when she wrote and recorded Mississippi Goddamn. There were people like Curtis Mayfield who, in the R&B side, who did People Get Ready or Keep On Pushing, or James Brown when he said I'm Black and I'm Proud or The Big Payback.
Some people think we don't have the right to say it's my country. Before they give in,
they'd rather fuss and fight
than say it's my country. I paid 300 years or more of slave driving sweat and welts on my back. This is my country.
Or the whole Philly International label when they did songs like Ain't No Stopping Us Now, or Gil Scott-Heron when he said the revolution would not be televised, and I could go on and on. All of those are the people who influenced my music. My music oftentimes has a political second entendre to it. The titles, the words, the lyrics, the actual sounds try to capture some of that progressive thought and some of that propulsing us into a better future.
Give it up sorrow, you must pay liberation due down. Free your mind, your heart will follow. Free your soul and don't sing the blues. Free yourself to give it up sorrow.
Free your mind, your heart will fire.
Monkey Branch and the Oneness of Juju. I spoke to him recently about his musical career. He told me the strong African elements in his music came about as a result of a musician he worked with in San Francisco.
When I went to San Francisco, I met a man named Ndiko Aba. Ndiko was a Zulu from South Africa who was, at the time, an expatriate. He had come here to tour, and then he had stayed here. But while he was here, he was trying to promote the idea of the resistance that was going on in South Africa, and he was recruiting musicians to learn some of his traditional African, South African songs and update them with a jazz feel. And he hired me, and I spent 2 years in his band called Ndiko and the Natives. And so that got me moving in that African direction. What I learned from him was several immense lessons. One, I learned that in African music, music was functional. It had a political ramification. It had an economic ramification. It had a social implication. So I learned that from him. I learned that African music was very polyrhythmic. I learned that the music was very improvisational. And when I heard some of his traditional South African songs, I said, you know, this sounds like what Pharoah Sanders is doing. This sounds like what Charlie Mingus was doing. So I saw this relationship between African and jazz music. Then I was recruited to play in the pit band for a musical theatrical production called The Resurrection of the Dead. And this was a ritual drama written by a man named Marvin X, and it was a ritual drama that was based around the music. When that play ended, the six musicians who had been the pit band, we decided we would continue that, what we were doing, and continue that, and we formed a group called Juju, and the rest is history.
When Juju initially came together, there were elements of the music that reflected the avant-garde aesthetic of Pharoah Sanders and John Coltrane. That meant that sometimes Plunky's saxophone would be screaming over African rhythms and Afro-Cuban percussion. This style did not necessarily go over well when he moved back to Richmond.
I moved back to Richmond in 1974 and tried to bring that sound and that culture that I had seen in New York and San Francisco to Richmond. Well, that was an uphill battle, to say the least, but I believe I had an effect on Richmond. But Richmond also had an effect on Juju, my band. In order to find an audience, we incorporated R&B rhythms with that Afrocentric jazz feel that we had, and and unwittingly sort of created a genre unto itself, this Afro-funk jazz, which would later become or would influence what was called DC go-go music. Over the years, I have continued to reinvent myself, but I keep reinventing myself by going to the past and the future at the same time. Even so, even to today, my most recent album I just released this year is an album called Never Too Late. And it combines all of the things that we're talking about. My son, who co-produced the record with me, is a hip-hop producer, and he samples my earlier recordings. He creates new snippets of those earlier recordings, and then I add new things to them. And so we get the old jazz, we get the hip-hop rhythm, and we get music that I hope will inspire people to dance, and at the same time is progressive enough to sort of propel us into a future.